First time I lifted weights in a gym, I was 14 years old. The reason I got into a gym because I was very skinny. And I was subject to bullying and body shaming, everything back in the days. And it was taking a toll on my confidence. While I was really fast on the court, when I was playing basketball, I was really fast, I was sharp. But I wasn't strong at all. Like it is with a lot of people when they hit the gym for the first time. I was very weak from a muscular standpoint, and the trainer had asked me to lift quite a bit that day, which I just could not do. And then because I could not do it, the trainer told me that this is not meant for you, in a very harsh and a rude way. So of course my ego was hurt, and I did not go back to the gym. The next day I was so sore, I couldn't move at all, and then I had fever because of that pain and soreness. So I thought that maybe it's right. This is not for me. Maybe I should just focus on what I'm doing.
Hello, Pathlock family and all the listeners tuning in. Welcome to Pathlock Lounge. I am Piyush Pandey, the CEO of Pathlock. I'm excited to share our very first podcast series, created with the intention to inspire, motivate, and just share experiences and have conversation about topics which are relevant to all of us. At Pathlock, we are not just about automating the audit process. We are committed to an employee-first culture where we engage in meaningful conversation about topics which are relevant to modern workforce. In season one of Pathlock Lounge, we'll delve into the topics which are very relevant to modern workforce. Topics such as mental health, empathy, financial well-being, or fitness as part of life. I hope these topics are relevant to people who have just started working, to people who have been working in the industry for 25 years. Today, I'm speaking with Rishabh Talang, the man behind India's leading health and fitness brand, CultFit, on the topic closest to my heart, health and fitness as part of our life. Today, I'm speaking to Rishabh Talang, the man behind the India's leading health and fitness brand, CultFit, on a topic closest to my heart, fitness, health, and how life can be reimagined with well-being in the corporate world. So welcome to Pathlock, Rishabh, and let's dive in.
Thank you.
So the first question I would like to start on this podcast is, how did you start CultFit? Like, what was the journey? What was the thought process, if you can share with us?
Yeah, long story, but I'll try to keep it as brief as I can. I used to be an athlete back in school and things. Wanted to make my career in basketball, which didn't happen. And then I had to study and get a job, and all of that happened. I worked with a couple of companies for over 6-7 years. But while I was working, what ended up happening was my fitness took a backseat for multiple reasons. Priorities changed. And then this is something that I wasn't very happy about. And that was also the reason why I changed my first job to get into something else. In my second job, I got opportunities to travel a lot to Europe. And when I used to be there for like 3 months or 6 months on a project, stay there. And I could strike good amount of work-life balance while I was there. So I thought, this is a good opportunity. Let me get back to fitness properly. And since I came from a sporting background back in the days, I was looking for some sort of sport to get deep into. And that's when I got exposed to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It's a form of grappling. Requires insane amount of strength. Very skillful. And I fell in love with the sport. Picked it up quite fast. Trained quite hard. I competed again. At the same time, I also got exposed to CrossFit, which was very different. And I tried going to a gym once in a while in between. And I dropped off like most people. Yeah. But then I got exposed to CrossFit. And I found it a really differentiated form of fitness compared to how traditional gymming had been happening at that time. So I got deep into that domain as well, did my CrossFit certification from the US, and started getting deeper into the science of fitness, etc. I also kept on training very hard because this is something that I really love to do. Started teaching part-time while I was on my travel assignments. and things. So I thought that this is something that I love to do. And when I asked myself that, what do I see myself doing a few years down the line? It is just creating an impact into people's lives. And that's what would, you know, make me happy. That's what would, in my mind, if I have to call myself a success, then creating an impact in people's life is something that I would want to do. And health and fitness look like a very strong anchor to me. I had a lot of inspiration from places where I had trained in all those different countries. I had a lot of guidance from coaches that I had trained under. And that's where the idea of Cult came from. When I started thinking of becoming a full-time fitness professional, I thought of Bangalore being a nice place because people are well-traveled. It was a very different concept when I had started. It was 2015. And, you know, setting up a warehouse and no machines. People still used to come into the center and ask me, this is all very cool. It looks great. All your trainers look very nice. But how will you do cardio? There are no machines here at all. So it was, you know, at that stage, at that point in time. So I thought that at least, but in Bangalore, people are well-traveled. So they would connect to these kind of concepts a lot faster. Fortunately, found a good place in Bangalore. And 2015, May was when I just quit everything else and just got full-time into starting Cult.
That's an amazing story. One of the things I've always wondered about, because there are people like you who are very motivated and they're driven by things which are meaningful for you, right? But what about normal people who have a busy life? What is the biggest challenge? What's stopping them from having fitness in their life? Or if they started, why do they stop? What will it take to continue?
Yeah, I think, I really think that it is a matter of priorities at different point in time. So just think about when we were all kids, we all used to be very active. I mean, there is hardly any kid that would go to school and not play a sport, or after school, kids would look for opportunities to play with their friends. So fitness, without knowing that it's fitness, is a part of everybody's life. And at that time, probably that happens to be our priority. And then, you know, people grow up and life happens. There are responsibilities, there is work, and there is everything else. And somewhere fitness takes a backseat, like it did for me. Even in my case, it's not that. Even coming from a sports background, I slipped for a little bit. I gained weight. My lifestyle became very unhealthy. And once you get into it, the inertia is very real. It's very difficult to come out of that. And I think if you just think, get deeper into it, introspect a lot, it's a matter of priorities. That's it. Once people realize that this is something that I need to prioritize, and just think about the same person. A lot of people, when they fall sick, and I'm talking about serious sickness, like things like diabetes or, you know, heart problems and things like that. A lot of people get into fitness after that because their doctor has asked them to lose weight and there is no other way for them to just maintain that disease. It's the same person who was playing a sport back in school. It's the same person who was not into fitness at all at some point in their life. And the same person got back into walking and running and things like that. So it's, like I said, it's the priorities at different points in time. And if they're able to manage those priorities well, I'm pretty sure that fitness can be a large part of their life.
Follow-up question to that. Like I was, one of the things I was thinking about is, I want to ask you, how do you work out in a day? So I'll come to that. But a question before that is, when you got into this journey, right, when you became really active, was there a goal? Like, as you mentioned, you were not feeling well, or you had back pain or something like that. Or it was just fun. You tried something, it was fun, and you followed it. And what do you do now?
Yeah, so the first time when like I said, I always used to play a sport. But at this point in time, I love weightlifting. And that's what I also evangelize a lot. The benefits are way too many for people at any age. And the first time I lifted weights in a gym, I was 14 years old. That was in Dehradun. The reason I got into the gym, because I was very skinny and I was subject to bullying and body shaming, everything back in the days. And it was taking a toll on my confidence. While I was really fast on the court, when I was playing basketball, I was really fast. I was sharp, but I wasn't strong at all. And I was made fun of how I looked and everything else. So I thought, someone told me, just go and lift weights and it's going to help you bulk up a little bit. So that was my motivation at that point in time. When I started, the first experience was not that great. Like it is with a lot of people when they hit the gym for the first time. I was very weak from a muscular standpoint, and the trainer had asked me to lift quite a bit that day, which I just could not do. And then because I could not do it, the trainer told me that this is not meant for you, in a very harsh and a rude way. So of course my ego was hurt, and I did not go back to the gym. The next day I was so sore, I couldn't move at all. And then I had fever because of that pain and soreness. So I thought that maybe it's right. This is not for me. Maybe I should just, focus on what I'm doing. And that's what it's about. But then my younger brother, who works with me even right now, he pushed me to, go back to the gym and go to some other gym. So we went, I took a membership. It's called Power Pack Gym in Dehradun. I don't think it exists right now, but at that time there was one of the good gyms in Dehradun. So went there, met some really big, huge guys. I was intimidated because of my past experience, but then they were very helpful. They were so nice to me. They helped me, get started, get onboarded to the journey. They helped me just understand the mechanics of weight training, etc. And after that, I just continued for a few years. Bulked up quite fast. I started liking how I looked. So of course that was one anchor for me. Later on, like I said, it took a backseat for me, and I stopped lifting weights. I gained weight because my priorities had changed, like I said. But I got back to sports. And then this was around 2012 when I got back to sports completely, and after which I haven't just stopped at all. And this has become so much a part of my identity that waking up early in the morning, getting a tough workout, pushing myself has just become a second nature. And this is something that I can't really live without.
That's a very inspiring story for me as well, because I have younger kids and they go through the challenge of, shall I do this in gym or just give up, right? And so if we think about this in corporate world, right, most of the people who have busy lives, they're working, responsibilities and kids. How do we, as a company or in the corporate world, how do we encourage people to have that kind of a lifestyle? I mean, you probably work with a lot of people as well as other corporations. What can be done to encourage this kind of behavior? Forget about the details,
yeah,
but to inspire people to be more active.
Yeah, I really think that it is about the environment. If the environment supports fitness for people, they will be more likely to get into fitness. Now, it could be from an organization standpoint, it could be things like, so I'll just give an example before I get into it. I've worked with companies where during my corporate stint, I worked with companies where there was a good gym in the campus, not just once, one, a couple of them. The membership was available at a ridiculously cheap price so that more people get into the gym. But that's a gym for which you'll have to walk a little bit of a distance. It's a 35-acre campus, for example. And then it's not something that you will see from your desk. So the kind of environment that I'm trying to say is that, can there be biking workstations in the office itself? Can there be the graphics that are there on the wall? Can they talk fitness? Can there be walking workstations, for example? Can just walking 10,000 steps a day be glamorized a lot? If that happens, if fitness is all around you, then of course you just cannot ignore it. And then when you see more people do it, you are more likely to get into it. That is one. Second, I think a lot of us have to do leading by example. So if the leaders in the company are walking the talk, that's one. And then also everybody who's at the people manager level is evangelizing fitness or manifesting fitness into their own lives and to the lives of everyone who's either rolling up to them or working with them in whatever capacity. But at that level, fitness has to be deeply penetrated, and it has to be a structural initiative, which can only be driven top down. That is second, third could be a little up for a debate. But I really feel that this is something that should be mandated by workplace policies. Long way to get there, but someday I think, I mean, you were talking about schools where pull-ups and push-ups is a part of the curriculum. Those kind of interventions will really help.
I know, I think that's a very helpful feedback. I definitely, we should think about glamorizing fitness so that people talk more about it and think about it. And do you see any trend between people who are in early 30s or late 20s versus people who are slightly older, late 30s and early 40s? Their motivations are different in terms of the glamour versus their doctor telling them something, or they're having some pains in different places.
Yeah, it changes a lot at different points. If I give you my own example, I spoke about the fact the reason I got into lifting weights the first time was because I wanted to look a certain way. That was my motivation at that time, and that remained for many years after that. But if you ask me right now, I just want to make sure that I'm... So I have a 1.5-year-old son. I want to make sure that I'm more available for my son. I also want to make sure that I'm very productive at running my business. And I feel that working out first thing in the morning gives me that anchor. So the motivation has changed from looking... I genuinely don't care about how I look right now, but I do care about, like I said, being more available for my son. And that means that I have to be free of aches and pains. I can't be like walking up from this chair and, oh, my back hurts, and all of those things cannot be a part of my life. And I feel that lifting weights and doing my mobility, doing my recovery work helps me achieve that goal. My mother is 62. She lifts weights 5 times a week. For her, it is, she loves the process of working out. She's been doing it for many years. But right now she lifts weights because it just allows her to, you know, get her 15,000 steps a day without having to really think about it, because the energy is so much after you're done with your weight training session. She also has a spinal issue, and working out regularly makes it more possible for her to walk without aches and pains. So things change at different points in time, but the channel to achieve that goal remains the same.
So Rishabh, let's talk about food. How does food affect the way we look and lifestyle, how we feel?
Yeah, I think food, of course, is a very important part of this entire equation. In general, the kind of food that we eat today is things that are easily available, things that can be easily consumed, and which are mostly processed. That food is also designed to be liked a lot, and that's designed to be craved a lot as well. But the problem is that food is deprived of all kind of nutrition. So you're getting in the calories, but you're not really getting in the kind of nutrition that you should be getting. And that's a recipe for disaster. From that, since that kind of food is so easily available, our environment has become such that the food that we should not be eating is very easily in reach for all of us. And the rule is that if the food is in your reach, you will eventually eat it. If it is bad food, you will eat bad food. If it is good food, you will eat good food. And it has got nothing to do with your willpower or how dedicated you are towards your health or fitness. It can be somebody as dedicated as me, or even someone like you who runs a few marathons a year. If the food is there, we will end up eating it. If it is in our reach, I can guarantee that you will eat it, or I can guarantee that I will eat it. So the first thing that we need to do is just redesign that food environment a lot. So in offices, you will typically see, you know, cookies being stored on the shelf, on the slab of the pantry, which is very easily accessible. And it's designed to be easily accessible because you want people who work there to easily get access to that food. But the problem is that those are cookies and those are sugary foods and things like that. And it is so easily in their reach. People are also working. They get tired. They need that mental break. And the first thing that they can reach out to is that kind of food. There can be things that are healthier in nature, tastier, of course, but there can be things that are healthier that are easily accessible. Things like cookies and all can, for example, be stored in the top shelf. So they have to, they should be able to, they should need to work hard a little bit to get to that, that kind of food. So if we can redesign our environment a little bit to favor in favor the good food part of things, I think that will be very helpful.
Yeah, I definitely will do that. And we can probably use that kind of guidance at home as well.
That's the first thing I did when I started getting very serious about my health and fitness. I just discussed with my wife and we just redesigned. We just cleared the kitchen completely. So at my home, you will not find any piece of junk in the kitchen. And I particularly, after dinner, I have sweet cravings for sure. And if there is anything sweet in my house at that point in time, there is nobody who can stop me from consuming it. But the thing is that it is not there. And fine, I know I can order it right then, but at the back of my mind or at the top of my mind, I'm still a healthy person. And if I'm making that effort, then, you know, that conflicts with my identity of being a person who is healthy and who works out. So just clearing it out helped me a lot in terms of getting my calories and nutrition in check. So that's one advice for pretty much everybody.
No, I think that can be really helpful. So let's go to the next level, because there are a lot of conversation about you should skip breakfast, or breakfast is the most important meal of the day, and when you should have dinner. So can you talk about what are the best practices you've seen on when should people eat food in their busy life and they're dropping kids or coming to work or going back to work?
I think it's best to keep it simple. Skipping breakfast or consuming breakfast, I think, should just be a matter of preference. There's no one healthy practice. The baseline simple rule is that if you consume more calories than what your body is burning, then you will gain weight. If you consume lesser calories than what your body is burning, you will lose weight. And if you consume the similar amount of calories, which is your maintenance calories, then your weight will remain the same. That's it. As long as people are able to manage their caloric load, I think more or less they are fine. They don't need to really worry about what time of the day am I eating, or any one kind of macronutrient am I eating, more of it or less of it. It does not really matter. But I would highly recommend that people eat a diet that's high in protein, and they eat calories which support their goals and support their metabolism. In terms of when to eat, I think let it be simple for them. Whenever it's convenient, let people form that routine and just follow it.
So let's talk about protein a little bit as well, because I think when we're growing up, when we're younger, we don't think too much about what is in your diet, right? What are you actually eating? How much carbs, protein? And there's a lot of talk about protein, significance of protein as you are in late 30s and 40s and 50s. What is your experience? What is your guidance about?
Yeah, it's a big, in my experience, talking to a lot of people, and I do talk to a lot of people who are concerning with their health and fitness. So I asked a bunch of people, actually, if I can help you achieve your goal, just tell me what your goal is. Tell me what you do through the day. And tell me, what do you eat through the day? So a lot of them told me, you know, what their day looks like. They also told me what they eat. Most of them, since they were, you know, we were in a health and fitness kind of a conversation, most of them were trying to eat healthy food. But the very common pattern across everybody was that their diet was lacking in protein. Now, people were thinking that they're having a diet that's high in protein because maybe there are some sprouts, maybe there are lentils and things like that. But the amount of protein that they should be having was not there in their plate at all. So protein, of course, is something that can solve a lot of nutrition problems of people for multiple reasons. I mean, protein is good for building muscle. It's one of the essential building blocks of muscle. It's good for your hairs. It's good for your hair. It's good for your nails. It's good for your cells. It's good for your recovery. It's also good for your weight management goals, because protein has the highest thermic effect of food. So if you eat more protein, your body burns more calories to digest it compared to the other macros. If you eat more protein, you also feel full for a longer period of time. So you will be able to avoid instances of overeating or instances of mindless eating, for example. So protein has a lot of upside to it. The problem, like I said, is that people are not eating enough. One practice or one skill that they can build in their life is including a source of lean protein in every meal. So I'm not asking them to get on a meal tracking app and just weigh everything you eat and log it in your app, and you should know how many grams of protein you're having. That's quite intense, if you ask me, and a very difficult behavior to build. Most people don't need to do this. But what most people can do is make sure that they look at their plate as... let's say when they look at the plate, keep only 25% of it as starchy carbohydrates, things like rice and pasta and things like that. 50% of that could be veggies and fruits. I would recommend at least three different colors in that section, so that they're getting a lot of minerals, etc. And remaining 25% is a source of lean protein. It could be chicken, it could be fish, it could be egg. For vegetarians, it could be soy, it could be beans and things like that. But as long as that is there and it's happening in every meal and it's happening every day, at least 80% of the time, then they're good to go. The reverse side is that the starchy carbohydrates constitute a large part of the plate right now. And that's something that needs to change.
Actually, that's very interesting, because when I see a lot of people who are trying to become vegan across the globe, we have offices in 7 countries, and there's an increasing trend in Europe and in some parts of US as well, where people are turning vegan, and they used to eat a lot of meat before, and now they're thinking about where do they get protein. So these are some of the things which we can probably
In fact, vegans can fulfill their protein requirement. Not that they cannot. They'll have to plan a lot. They'll have to work much harder compared to somebody who eats animal protein. It's easier to get protein when you are a non-vegetarian. The protein that you find in non-veg food is also more bioavailable. It's easily absorbed in the body compared to veg food, but they can still, you know, they'll have to eat a little more. They'll have to make sure that those protein sources are coming in together so that the amino acid profile is complete. So like I said, a lot of planning, but they can.
So are there snacks which, like, for example, if you look at nuts in office when we have snacks, does it help if people eat more nuts, but it has a lot of calories? Or what is your view on healthy snacks which can be helpful for people to balance their diet?
Yeah, so nuts are largely a source of fat, so calorie dense, and people should be having nuts, but it's a very small quantity that they should be having. But I'd highly recommend that they eat nuts at least once or twice a day. But that should not become their snack, because a lot of calories will go in. From a healthy snacking standpoint, they could probably be just some healthier pieces that has some fiber. Those things will be helpful. I don't know if there will be protein based snacks, because they'll need to, you know,
yeah, it has to help.
They'll need to eat meat or eat soy and things like that.
So let's switch gears. One of the topics which I wanted to understand from you: what kind of programs do you see in corporate world, or people who have busy lives? What kind of programs people do who are Gen Zs versus people who are slightly older? What do you see happening in big cities, or people who work from home or they come to office? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think in general, people have started to prefer workouts that are shorter. In terms of time, I'm talking mostly about strength and endurance kind of training, short workouts, but get a lot of work done in that amount of time. So could be fast paced workouts. People are also lately, they've started to prefer outdoor workouts a lot, because especially after the pandemic, the awareness about getting sun exposure and spending time in nature and those kind of things have increased, and people have started to do a lot of outdoor workouts as well. So that's something that is picking up. I see the awareness is building. So in the newer generations or even the older generations, the awareness is definitely building about lifting weights, about building muscle. In fact, I was talking to my mother last evening and I was just asking about her fitness journey because she works out a lot right now. But I was just asking about how it started for her back in the days because there were no gyms at that point in time. So from her point of view, the first time she went to attend an aerobic class, the instructor told her that don't lift dumbbells and all of that because that will make you look too muscular and muscles are not for women. So that's exactly what the instructor told her. You don't want to look like a man and hence you should be coming and doing things like this. So that was the belief at that point. And it's not many years back. It's maybe, let's say, 15, 20 years back. This was the belief. But now people know that building muscle is not about looking a certain way. Muscles are also not reserved for any gender. Muscles are not also easy to build. So how much ever weight you lift, it's not very easy to bulk up the way a bodybuilder does, for example, because that's a very sport-specific requirement. They have to eat significant amount of calories in surplus to build the kind of bulk that is generally spoken about. So they are not just going to bulk up automatically by just lifting a little bit of weight. So that awareness is building in the older generation as well. So all in all, I see people are getting into workout, whether it's the Gen Zs or the older generations, and people are understanding the upside of being healthy.
Definitely, I think we see that trend across the new generation. So one of the questions I always struggle with, because I've heard this from other people, there are people like you who sleep early, wake up at 4:30 and work out, and then people say, you know, that's Rishabh and people like that, right? I'm a normal person. So what can normal people do? When I say normal people who cannot change their schedule, and you spoke about mixing how they lead their during the day. But suppose, let's assume people who cannot get 2 hours before their kids go to, or before they go to office, or in the evening they're stuck in traffic. What can they do during the daytime at home or at work, which will make fitness a part of it and do some of the things which you mentioned?
Yeah, very, very relevant question, because I don't even expect most people to work out like I do, because what I do is very in line with my goals and in line with my history with working out. But what I would really push people to do, in fact, pretty much everybody across the country, across the globe, to do something which is fitness. Now, I'll just give you a very actionable tool to help people just become a person who works out. So there's something called micro workouts or exercise snacks. The idea of exercise snacks or micro workouts is that you do workouts in small chunks and just do a little bit of it and do it twice or three times a day. That is a micro workout. So you could just, you know, be sitting on this chair, we could just get up, do some squats, do it for 10 squats per minute, do it for 5 minutes. That makes it 50 squats for us. And one part of our micro workout is done. The next can happen in the evening. Now, that is so much better than not working out at all. Exercise snacks, on the other hand, is basically 3 or 4 times a day at an interval of about 4 hours or something like that. Just do something for 20 seconds, but at a very high intensity. So it could be just climbing up the stairs. So I could just go down, climb up the stairs if I have access to stairs, but as fast as I can. It doesn't need warm up because, you know, if you just ask me to just come for something which is very, very urgent, say, Rishabh, can you just come up the stairs? This is very urgent. I'm not going to warm up and then walk up the stairs, right? I'm just going to rush to it. So I just do that for 20 seconds, 3 or 4 times a day. And that's supposed to help improve our VO2 max. That's also supposed to help improve our insulin regulation because you are doing activity in short bursts, and especially if you do after meals, it will be very helpful. Now, this does not require time commitment. I'm saying 20 seconds, 3 times a day or 4 times a day. If you can do only that much, at least you're doing something for your workout, and there is an important metric which is moving at the end of the day. Things like VO2 max and things like that. What's also important to understand is that typically in the fitness industry, we all follow a very all or nothing mentality. So we either go to the gym, do a 1 hour workout, or we don't do anything. So that's typically the mentality that sets people back a lot in their health and fitness journey. What we need to understand is that you cannot get a 1 hour workout every day. Every day cannot look the same from our motivation standpoint. Our sleep will be all over the place. Probably we'll have bad days at work. There will be all kinds of experiences. Probably you're unwell or recovering from sickness or anything like that. But as long as you're doing something that is fitness, it could even be just walking at a leisure pace, keep your phone at home, free of distractions, 5 minutes outside. That's it. But you've done something which connects fitness and health to your identity. And when health and fitness becomes a part of your identity, you become unstoppable. So the effort should be in just making that identity shift through very small little interventions and not like a waking up at 4:30 and doing a 1.5 hour workout every day. That is not needed for most people.
So, and this will become more relevant because a big chunk of our employee base works from home, right? And are there programs or are there things which other corporations do to encourage this people who are working from home, right?
There are organizations that I know are helping people get into sports through internal competitions and things like that. I mean, at Cult, we do something called Fit Games. It's an event that goes on for 2 months. Multiple different sports, gets quite competitive. There are 4 teams that will get formed. And for those 2 months, pretty much everybody at every different level is competing in some sport. As a build-up to that sport, those teams come together and practice as well. And we've seen many people coming back to playing a sport or starting a new sport. I mean, I see people, so I swim. I swim 3 or 4 times a week. I see people who've recently picked up learning how to swim because of the recent Fit Game event. And those are the meaningful shifts that we can make in people's lives through organizations. So that is one example. Others, there are companies who arrange marathons. And like I myself did a Wipro half marathon many years back. So there are companies who are creating that culture of sports, fitness, walkathons, and things like that. There's a lot more that we need to do, but these were some examples.
No, that's different. And is there this conversation about all these devices which come in the picture? What do you see technology's contribution to people being active and fitness? Has it changed? Do you have any recommendation what people can do very easily?
Yeah, so technology is definitely a great enabler. It can very easily flip and go towards the negative side because smartphones and that infinite scroll and all of those things are dangerous. It's very important for people to use technology in their advantage. But then things like smartwatches, things like sleep tracking, step tracking is a great proxy for you to know that you are active through the day. So a very small example. So there's this phenomenon called, it's called an active couch potato. What this basically means is, it's a very confused statement, right? That you're active, but you're also a couch potato. So what this basically means is that an active couch potato is a person who works out, who's doing a purposeful workout, like going to a gym or like going for a run, but through the day is very sedentary. That person is an active couch potato. And a lot of study tells us that purposeful workout and being active through the day are two different things. And if you're working out purposefully, but still being sedentary through the day, that does not, like just working out in the morning does not negate the negative health effects of sitting through the day. You have to do both. So what I'm trying to say is that using a smartwatch tells you how many steps you've walked. And steps is not the only thing. I mean, you could wash your car, you could do the household work, you could wash utensils, you could play around with your pet or your kids. You could do anything. And that makes you active. The metric is so much more simpler to understand. that if you're walking 10,000 steps, then you have been active. Or 10,000 is also just a number. It's just very, yeah. It's just very relative to where people are in their journey. But it just gives them that metric that they can look up to achieve their health goal. There are also opportunities of working out remotely with a trainer. The kind of trainers that probably people will not have access to where they live. Or if they don't have the time to go to the gym or things like that, then they can obviously use technology to get access to coaches that they wouldn't have access to otherwise. So those are the things where technology can really enable world-class fitness.
We've been talking a lot about physical health and sort of having a healthy lifestyle. Can you talk about how can organizations like ours support an environment where it supports people's mental health as well? And probably people can live a healthier lifestyle in general, but with a focus on mental health.
Yeah, I'm not an expert in mental health, but so it's not going to be a very mental health kind of an answer. But from a mindset standpoint, there are a few things that organizations can do. And one concept that I generally speak about a lot is helping people set intentions. So what I typically do in my work, first thing in the morning after my workout and when all those morning rituals with my son and everything is done, I just set the intention for the day. And so basically this concept called implementation intention. And the idea of implementation intention is that at this point in the day or whenever, I will do this. So for example, after finishing this 11:30 a.m. meeting, I will sit in the room without distractions and finish this particular task. And that task should be something, the way I generally plan it, should be something that should just make everything else very easy for me to do or even unnecessary. If I've achieved this, after that, if I don't even do anything else, it's okay. I mean, the other things I can do tomorrow or next week or I can delegate or whatever, but this is something that I have to complete. And that once I'm done with that task, it gives me the mindset of just being able to do anything else. So if my most important part of my work, whatever said and done, work is important. We will need to sit on our chair, work. We will need to attend meetings. We'll need to spend that time at office. Cannot compromise on that. And then fitness and health is also very important. So just make sure, you know, we are helping people shuttle between the both. So as an organization, if you can help people set that, if you can help everybody in the office set that daily intention as a ritual, and these rituals are powerful, they set the culture for any organization. As a daily ritual, set the intention, finish that task, and then rest of the day is yours. You use it for your fitness, you use it for your family, you use it for your health, anything. You've essentially finished 90% of your work with that implementation intention.
So, Rishabh, one other question I would like to know in our company, what can leadership do to encourage this kind of behavior across the company, across all the offices we have?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that the leadership can do, what the name actually suggests, is lead by example. So just manifest fitness, you know, into your own lives, which I'm sure, a lot of people at the leadership position might be doing because you are doing it. But what's also more important is that it trickles down. So everybody who's responsible for managing people, which means that there are people who are looking up to them, should just start becoming fit and healthy themselves, should also start talking a lot about it. A lot of times people hesitate in terms of like saying that I worked out 30 minutes this morning or I did yoga or I did my 10,000 steps or whatever. But I believe people should really talk a lot about that because you never know who you might be inspiring. So once that culture of just working out or doing healthy things become a part of life for people managers, everybody else would start to follow in. So I think that's the biggest thing the biggest shift that can come, just lead by example.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that. So I think as we go towards the end of our podcast, as we think about our audience, what would you like them to take away from this conversation and think about if one or two things they can take from this conversation?
Yeah, I think the most important takeaway for me would be, one, to avoid the all or nothing mentality, which I spoke about also, and look at fitness as essentially building a bunch of skills. And that skill can be as simple and as small as making time and taking a 5-minute action. Do that. If you're not able to head to the gym, do that 1-hour workout. If you're not able to, you know, run that 5K or a 10K, that's fine. But do something which is very possible to do in just 5 minutes. Can be whatever you like to do. Does not even have to be a particular form of workout. But just doing this simple act will make sure that there is that domino effect and will make sure that this simple action will lead to a large momentum at the end of it. Do that every day and just watch yourself transform.
I think that's a great advice. Don't think about all or nothing. So my last question will be, if you can paint a picture of what a typical day can look like for a normal employee or normal person, somebody who's not exceptional or very, very disciplined, how would you describe or what would you suggest a normal software engineer or somebody working in a corporate world can lead their life if you can paint a picture of an example day?
Yeah, I think generally a software engineer or people who work in offices, their job requires them to sit a lot through the day. So the effort should be in the direction of breaking that total sitting time through some activity. It could be very simple things like, instead of a 1-hour meeting, schedule 50-minute meetings only, so that the next 10 minutes or even 5 minutes, it can be a 55-minute meeting, but those 5 to 10 minutes can be used for some activity. That is one. Second, if you're taking calls, then just maybe do walking meetings. Take the call while you walk. Because those steps are very, very powerful. There's something called non-exercise activity thermogenesis. And I spoke about purposeful workout and non-exercise activity through the day. A large part of weight loss is going to happen in that period and not necessarily your workout. So if you're very active through the day, your metabolism is going to be higher, and which means you're burning more calories. And in the end, the equation that I spoke about, that if you eat lesser calories than what you burn, you will lose weight. Most people need to lose that extra weight. So just taking, you know, walking meetings will be very helpful. One practice that I personally follow at work is at least one meeting with another colleague. And I do a lot of one-on-ones because I can engage in deeper discussions that way. So at least one meeting I schedule after lunch. And that's a walk outside and around the office. It helps in stacking more non-exercise activity. It also helps in getting more sunlight. It also helps in, since I'm doing it after lunch, it helps me, you know, it helps with better insulin regulation, which is a healthy practice. So helps with too many things. Just that 10 minutes is so powerful. I just told you 3 benefits that I see, but I'm sure there are many others. The other things that people can do is just break that sitting time by doing a few stretches that they can do right there on their desk. And there are many things, you know, that are available online. There are many ideas that are available online. Or you can put posters, you know, on the desk to help people get into that stretch. And it does not need to be, again, a 30-minute stretch session. It can be 10 seconds also. 10 seconds is better than 0 seconds. So those are just a few ideas that were top of my mind.
Great. Thank you, Rishabh. It was great having this conversation. And thanks again for taking the time. I'm sure most of the people at Pathlock and whoever listens to this podcast will enjoy your guidance in this conversation.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me here.
Thank you.